The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy.
If you're over 30 in a football, that's half your age hitting the digs. Those lads are out partying at St. William Street later that night. I'm going home to have an ice bath.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.
And you're very welcome along to this week's edition of Friday Night Racing. Friday Night Racing on Off the Ball is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie. You can follow the Twitter account at HRI Racing and the hashtag is Every Racing Moment. As ever, Johnny Ward is with us in studio and our guest this week is Patrick Mullins. Patrick, good afternoon to you. How are you?
Very good, Jared. Thanks very much.
It's the weekend before Galway. What kind of a weekend do you have in store to warm up, to get ready for what's coming next week?
A quiet one. There is no racing, no jump racing for us, which is great. And I've been watching my weight all week for the Connacht Hotel handicap on Monday. So it'll probably be a weekend of salmon and rice and
all the crack.
Bit of soy sauce and make the world a difference.
Touch of soya sauce, yeah. It's part of the secret recipe as well.
You can imagine the listeners are just like, what is he riding on Monday now that he's eating salmon and soy sauce for the weekend? So it'll be something for everyone to listen into for the rest of the show, I guess.
Well, usually what I ride is something you shouldn't back in that race. So
yeah, it's one of the biggest miracles how you've never won it, actually, because you're riding something nearly fancied every year, but a stablemate just wins instead.
I know. I keep having that blasted Orban McMahon and Jody Townend coming down my outside. So anyway, if we keep throwing enough darts at it, maybe one of them will stick.
Do you never get bored eating the salmon and the rice?
Oh no, it's only for the. It's only on. It's not all the time. So, but no, it's fine. I like it because it's quite a square meal. So it's. I know it fills me, and it's mentally as well as anything else. It's just. It keeps me sane.
I meant that was kind of standing. Are you okay with your diet normally? Then you can kind of eat largely what you want.
Yeah. Normally, like week to week, I can eat more or less. You know, riding amateur weights, 12 stone, 11.5 stone. I can eat more or less what I want without pigging out. I don't mean any Chinese or pizzas very often, but yeah, there's just the big festivals. Then you want to get it down. You want to be able to do near 11 stone. So. Fish is a big help then.
And I suppose, in fairness, it is the big festival, and so therefore, it kind of. I remember Roy Keane talking about the week of big games. He'd get a sore hip. It was like his body was telling him to prepare for battle. And you, in a weird way, it's kind of something similar. Something big is about to happen if you have to change your diet.
Yeah, and it's no harm. You're going in lean and mean. So it's. It's good to do it every now and then anyway.
I know you're a fan of other sports as well. It's been a big talking point about how performing in front of a live audience is much better and much different, and it's a completely transformed experience. What are you expecting as we get back to the position where there's 1,000, I think, paying customers every day at Galway, and there will be atmosphere around that? So what are you expecting and how will it change things for you?
I suppose racing is a little bit different in that when we're competing, the crowd doesn't play a major part in it. You're not really aware of them, you can't really hear them. So in the 4 to 5 minutes you're on the horse, actually in the race, it doesn't really matter. I have to say, the bigger festivals there in Aintree and Punchdown, I wasn't in Cheltenham, but it was a lot easier before races. You could get around, you could move around much easier. Not having crowds, but it's funny, since they started letting a few people back into the races in the last month, you know, started 200, 500, 1,000 next week, you can really notice the sounds and the atmosphere, stuff that before you didn't notice it because you took it for granted. So it does make a big difference. Just it makes it more enjoyable, I suppose. It's been very sterile there for the last year, but on a competitive front, I don't think it affects jockeys the same way it affects maybe players in pitch sports.
And would there be specific horses who might have benefited over that period of time who might maybe be a little bit spooked by it and we actually get full crowds back?
Yeah, I mean, look, that is definitely a thing. You know, horses can, particularly in the likes of Galway, Cheltenham, Punchdown, where there's big crowds and there's microphones and crying babies and the likes, that can get some horses upset and get them to use a lot of nervous energy before the race. But, you know, it's one of those, there's a handful of horses, I think, that would really affect most horses, but maybe in bumpers and stuff, more those handicappers, those horses have been around a few years, they've seen it all, you know, so.
What was Galway like last year, actually, Patrick? I didn't go down because, you know, I'd been to a few meetings with behind closed doors, and few too many really for me in terms of it was a day that just dragged, because I guess you know from a journalist perspective there wasn't an awful lot of benefit of being there, and it became, I suppose, something of the new normal. And this has been in over a year now in which we've had either no crowds or small crowds as is now. Galway must really stick out. Like, what was it like 12 months ago, because every winner is really celebrated in Galway.
Yeah, and I suppose it was the first major festival that we'd gone to without crowds. It was very strange. You know, we were getting changed to the champagne bar, which wasn't stocked. And we seemed to be, you know, it was like being back at the Leaving Cert. You all had a table and a chair with your name on it, and it was all spaced out. You had no showers. You know, you're having to walk from the changing room over to the weigh room rather than being together. So it was different. And obviously, there was no crack, there was no buzz, but it didn't take away from, I was lucky to win the Galway Hurling and Armagh, and again, on the track, in the race, crossing the line, the buzz was the same. Was it a bit of a flat tire coming back into the parade ring? Yes, because usually you get to walk all along the side of the ring and across the top where, you know, there's a huge crowd, and that part was missed, all right. And, you know, this year will be better, but it'd be great to get back to full crowd there next year, hopefully.
And what are your favourite memories of Galway? Like, obviously, we'll talk about winning the hurdle and that a couple of times, but what were your earliest memories of I suppose, like, realising that this festival is somewhat different? I think, was it John B. Cain? I think it was John B. Cain called it a state of mind, the Galway races, but it is that.
Yeah, I suppose one of my favourite memories is definitely winning three goldfish in the centre, in the hurdy-gurdies in the centre. I didn't usually get to do that at most racing festivals, so that was I think they survived the trip back home. There was a leak in the bag.
Wow. And, probably longer odds than winning the race in the Monday, which you haven't managed yet.
Yeah, but it's I suppose I would have grown up Mystical City. David Casey won under those bright orange colours, and that was framed and stuck up on the wall at home. That was 96. I was only six. I don't really remember the race, but I remember the excitement, and she was talked about for years afterwards. And we've been very lucky in the race in the last 5 or 6 years, but we had nothing for the 20 years before that. So, you know, on the Galway Plate, the Galway Hurdle, they're proper iconic races, even just because of their name, you know, the plate. There's you know, most things are the Gold Cup or the Champion Hurdle, and it's such a unique track as well. It's unlike any other track where we have those big festivals like Punchdown, Leopardstown, Fairy House. So it is. It is completely unique in our country. Yeah.
What's different about the track? Will you just explain a bit of that to us?
Well, it's quite undulating. It's tight. Obviously, because it's in the summer, the ground is quite good. You have a lot of big fields because it's a festival. Because the ground is good, then no one wants to get caught wide. A lot of people then will want to get forward and in order to get out of trouble. So the pace at the start of the race can be quite strong. A lot of jostling position, and like I said, it's a smaller track than, say, Punchdown, Fairy House, Leopardstown, so the bends come up quicker, so you don't have as much time to get sorted before a bend comes up. Then the last half a mile, last five furlongs probably, you swing down past the castle, very tight bend, run steep downhill, which means that horses who, say, in Punchdown or Leopardstown will be backpedaling, they tend to keep going for a little bit longer in Galway because they can roll down the hill a bit. And then you start to turn, and the climb, it's, people talk about the Cheltenham Hill. I mean, the Galway Hill is three times the size of it, I think. And you're turning, you're rising. If the horses in front are beginning to tire, so some people like to take a chance, go down the inside, but there's a lot of traffic there. If you sit and wait, you'll find people start fanning out, and you can suddenly be 8 or 10 wider on the home bend, and that's not where you want to be either. So the pace of the race in the first half a mile is very important. If it's a strong pace, you can sit back and the gaps will open because horses will tire. Or if they start getting racing, maybe crossing the road, which is about seven furlongs out, six furlongs out maybe. But if, which does happen quite a lot, the horses in front slow it up down the back straight, from four furlongs out to two furlongs out is just bumper cars. Everyone's trying to get into small gaps. There's horse going forward, sideways. You're turning, you're rising. Horses are getting unbalanced. Jockeys are getting anxious. It's a lot more hustle and bustle than the likes of Leopard Sound, Fairy House, Punchdown, where those long straights and sweeping bends sort horses out a lot more.
And in terms of like runners on the flat, and you look at Gavin Ryan, the year that he had last year, and you see if a young jockey does well around Galway, it almost looks like as if it's kind of like, I don't know, we're talking about Dawson Devoy turning it on the European stage and for Bowes. Does this mean if you can perform around Galway, because it's incredibly difficult for a flat jockey as well. I know we spoke about the race on the Monday, but like in terms of jostling for position and say in the 7 furlong to mile race, even the mile and a half races, like from your perspective from watching it and your experience of riding on the flat there, like it must, is there anything as tough as trying to win a handicap around Galway with a full field?
You don't see the traffic congestion like that late on in a race like you do in Galway. Because the ground is good and horses roll on the hill, they get the 3 furlongs out, everything's still there. Whereas in a lot of places, and the straight is only about a furlong and 50, 100 yards, but time you're actually straight. So no, I don't think there's another, and like I said, because it's a festival, there's large fields, lots of horses. I don't think you get that anywhere else.
Just one point, when you were talking earlier on about walking in front of the crowd down to the parade ring, there's no sense of adrenaline that you get as a jockey from that either helps or hinders you in the race? Is there any aspect of that has been missing from everybody? I know it's the same for everybody, and so therefore it would have been the same impact on it, but is that something that has had an impact on jockeys' performances or even, I don't know, their ability in a race somehow?
I suppose as an experienced jockey, you tend to blank it out. Once you're on top of the horse, you might be nervous in the parade ring about something, but I find once you get on the horse, you're in your routine then. You know what you're doing, you're checking your irons, checking your reins, you're running through your game plan, you're getting down to the start. So maybe for a younger jockey, perhaps. But I don't think there's been any huge... I don't think any jockey has performed particularly better or worse in the last year than they did massively before that. I mean...
Do you miss that part? Is that bit enjoyable where you're on a favourite, say, and it's the end of the day and the crowd is going completely mental beforehand and you're like, yeah, this is what I want to be. This is why I've been eating salmon and rice for the last week.
Yeah, it is. I mean, like you miss that. You do miss that just that buzz in those in the big festivals. You know, when there's just floods of people. And going out on a favorite, you know, that added little bit of pressure is good. That's what you know. I think that's, you know, if you're going out there on a 10 or 12 to 1 shot, not that it doesn't matter as much, but going out there on a favorite does sharpen the senses. Yeah.
I get, like, do jockeys still let their hair down during Galway as well? Because I remember you'd go into the hole in the wall or whatever, and you go into various places and you'd see a lot of, certainly trainers around, because it's almost like a working holiday that, you know, it's such a social. I've seen trainers at the races having a good time along the years. Like, has that changed in your years, like, or is it more professional now where you commute?
Well, we would always go up and down every day because we're back right out in the morning. We stay up Saturday night and we used to always have a good bit of crack Saturday night. And to be fair, Galway, we would know Galway as they breath test quite a lot and we usually get drug tested up there as well. So, you know, there is quite strict, you know, protocol is the right word, but deterrence, I suppose, to the old way. But we would usually go out Saturday night. I usually book a table in Kerwin's Lane. A few of us have dinner there. We used to go to the Hole in the Wall. Probably grew out of that now, and I think it's closed. But yeah, it is good crack. You can have a bit of fun without painting the town completely red. But and Robbie McNamara now used to be able to do both. But Robbie was a Paul Carver type. There are very few of those.
Yeah, and just actually to explain that, obviously, if you're to, I guess to compare it to driving a car, like how many beers can you have in a night out if you're going to be worried the next morning? So like if you had three beers in the Saturday night, could you be breathalyzed and be over the limit to race the next day then?
I don't know the exact, but no, like you can go out and have a few drinks and like, you're not going to be riding until the afternoon, you know, you're not riding at 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning. So, you know, you can go out and enjoy yourself, within reason.
So not Paul Carberry then.
What's your,
Paul Carberry, or, I mean, Robbie Mack used to do, I used to be in awe of what Robbie Mack could do on how little sleep he could get for the week and still ride winners for sport up there. So he was one of a kind.
What is your book of rides like then for the week? What are you looking forward to the most?
I think I have a good book of rides. Obviously in the Connacht Hotel, the old GPT. In the last 20 years, I think there's been one horse carried more than 11 stone one to win. So 11 stone one would be my minimum. So that's what I'm trying to look at, riding a horse down around that weight. There's three there at the moment: Exchange Rate, My Sister Sarah, and Hookup are the three I'd be looking at. And I might have to do a pound or two over on one or two of them if I ride. But they're the three. I like Exchange Rate. He won there before. He's been competitive off a much higher mark than he is now. And like I said, course form is huge. So he's one I would quite like to ride.
When does that decision get made?
Tomorrow morning, and we have the top weight, so I'm kind of hoping Willie doesn't run the top weight, which brings the weights up a little bit for me in the middle. But it'll be tomorrow morning. Willie will make the declarations, and then you want to see the draw, what draw you get as well, before you decide which horse you're going to ride. You know, you don't want to be drawn out the car park. You're probably going to be drawn one or two either. But
that's... why not one or two?
Well, if you do blow the start, you get stuck down the rail. You can do it, but if you need your horse to jump and jump well, and then you need to go forward, your options are limited straight away. If you get stuck 6-7 down the rail, you're hoping someone gives you a gap. Whereas if you're a little bit wider, you can look for a gap in your outside and your inside. Whereas if you're down the rail, you only have one way to go, and not a lot of gaps come there. They can come there, and when it works out, jockey's a genius, but a lot of time, what happens to the horse on the rail in 6th or 7th is they don't even get into the race. They just finish with 13th and never come off. I was there 1 year on Legal Spin. I'd never even come off the bridle to load 100 yards in the line. It's not how I'd like to ride the race. And but it's not the end of the world either. But then Hookup as well is another one. She's a very good mare who doesn't jump fantastically well. So the fact that this is a flat race, she could be better than her jumps form. So that would be interesting. And My Sister Sarah went up 10 pounds for winning in Listowel, but she ran well here. She finished 4th in the Amateur Maiden last year. So, and she stays very well. So she's one you have to consider as well.
So just for context, we're talking here about it's the big amateur race on the opening night of the Galway Festival. It's called the Connacht Hotel Handicap, and it's the most valuable amateur handicap race on the Irish racing calendar. 14 times you've ridden in this, Patrick, and you've yet to win it. So when you're saying Willie's going to make that decision about maybe putting the top weight in or not, and you have a fancy for maybe that not happening, how much lobbying are you doing at this point, and how does that lobbying actually work? Is it like, oh, come on, for God's sake?
No. I've learned through experience that your best thing is just to sit back and wait for Willie to make his decision, because generally his first reaction is to do the opposite of what you ask.
Well, that I was going to say, is there a bit of reverse psychology going, geez, you better stick that top weight in? Absolutely, that's the best thing you could do here.
No, I find everyone's always getting flustered on what Willie's going to do. I found the best way to keep your sanity is just let him do what he's going to do and then make your decision. So
he has an owner as well to potentially, you know, and a horse obviously to potentially satisfy the needs of in terms of that potential top weight. It's not all about the prodigal son.
Yes, yeah, exactly, yeah. So he's got a million different strings pulling out of him. So that's why he likes to make his decisions late. It means there's no more variables can change. So we'll wait and see what he does.
All right, and with a hoodoo like this, when does it become a psychological thing for you? Like, this is your Everest, your white whale, your Captain Ahab. How does this work?
It'll either, like, on statistically, like I said, with the weights, chances are I'll get one or two, well, in 20 years, one, that might win it. So, look, I'm waiting for Willie Mullins. Short one will pop up. I mean, I've got beaten on it on Cheltenham winners, Grade 1 winners, Royal Ascot winners. So I'm not sure what my next way about it is, but
it's a good race, though. It's a proper good race, like really good trainers, and I don't know Patrick as well. This was like Galway's chain. Dermawhell used to win Galway every year and whatever, but like Dermawhell has hardly been mapped in recent years in terms of top trainer, because the likes of your dad and latterly Gordon Elliott and all these horses just start to flourish. So it's seriously competitive. You mightn't even be on the favourite, put it that way.
No. And I mean, the mare won it last year for Tony, went on and won a Group 1 of the flat.
Yeah.
you just don't know. You could run into anything in Galway. I mean, I won a bumper on Annie Power in Galway. And imagine the horse finished second was a bit sick.
Mm.
So what's the rest of the week like then for you?
There's the mile and a half maiden. Possibly Emmett has 0-10 in it, and who again has won a bumper there. Our horses, we have three or four entered, but they're all on the ballot. So whether any of them get in, I don't know. Then I don't think there's anything for me in the hurdle. And
you're not going to ride in the hurdle, no?
Well, Sally is top weight, so possibly if he runs there, I could ride him, but I'm not sure if 2 miles around Galway is really his thing at the moment. Willie might find an easier race from on the flat, perhaps. And then Burning Victory is there. Again, she could be well handicapped. When she won the Triumph, I know she was gifted it when the horse fell, Moore's horse.
Yeah, God, how can we, the authorized horse, how are we forgetting his name?
Goshen fell, and she beat Aspire Tower and All Mankind. I think she's running off 1-4-2. So she could be well in, however, her jumping isn't fantastic, and she just might be another Max Dynamite in that sense that, you know, her mark says she's well in, but her jumping might not allow her. Like I was saying, everything happens so fast in Galway. If you're not winging hurdles, you make your own bad luck. And then Ciel Den Edge there as well. He was second Punchdown. He's one of JP's. So he would have a good squeak now. You're on very well in Punchdown. He's always been placed in these big handicaps. He probably doesn't have enough up his sleeve to win it, but he'll run well.
Just on Saldi then. So if he rocks up in the race, is that a pointer in itself? Because you're saying there are other options available to him. Because he's obviously a fascinating horse. His flat form this year is good. Albeit he looked like he lacked a gear, maybe a Royal Ascot. But like, here's a proper grade one juvenile over hurdles who's running the Galway hurdle.
Yeah, and he won the Morgiana there 1 year with Danny. He's just, this year he hasn't sparked at all. So, but we're happy with him at home. You know, look, you could roll the dice, and top weights have a great record in the hurdle. So you could roll the dice for the huge amount of money doesn't offer, or, you know, he looks like he's going to be a talented horse in the flat as well. So I don't know what way Willie's going to go.
Like, onto the plate as well, because I was at the launch during the week in Galway, and I mean, you look at like the hurdle, you look at the likes of Saldier, you look at the horse of Peter Fahey's who won at Aintree, who actually won his maiden at Galway as well, and you have like all these really classy horses. You look at Sharjah obviously winning the race under you, so effectively it's kind of a Group 1, a Grade 1 handicap in some respects. Then you look at the plate and it's like Durasso, Sam Crow, horses like this, it's such a classy race. Do you think you'll have entered in that?
Easy Game has 11-9. I rode him in it last year, but it rained, and Easy Game just doesn't play when it rains. 11-9, it's hard to think. I think only two horses in the last 22, since 1999, have carried more than 11 stone in the plate. So this is a race, where, a bit like a race on Monday, that weight does matter. So off 11-9, he probably is out of it. Brahma Bull, likewise 11-6, he probably topped out. He looked like he was all out to win his handicap and Punchdown. Come back down to the Royal Rendezvous. He was second at last year, possibly a bit unlucky. If dice or the cards had fallen the other way, he might have been able to win, but he's £8 higher for it, so that's going to make life difficult for him. Animix at 11-3. Right kind of profile, but he's a horse who's disappointed us usually. And now maybe this will be the time when he pops up in a big race, but again, he's got plenty of weight. So Live of Laugh is there as well. Again, is he probably topped out at his age after winning the top of him? Probably. For me, the one for me is Koshari down at 10-6. He's won a good handicap hurdle there at Punchdown. He's quite unexposed. He's a lightly raced horse. He's had his injury troubles. He isn't the most fantastic jumper, and that will be the query about him. But he has 10 stone 6, and when you see one of our horses getting in the bottom that could be unexposed, I think you should always follow them.
I did want to ask you about the impact that the weather's having on, because it was tropical. Technically, if it's over 20 degrees at night, this is new information out this week. We're going through a tropical situation. And then I was talking to my mum and dad in the Thai today, and there was an absolutely massive thunder and lightning storm and huge rain out of nowhere. Apparently, it's just travelling up the Midlands. I don't know, maybe you guys got it or not, I'm not sure. But what difference does the 30 degrees temperature actually make to the training? Do you pull everything forward an hour in the morning and make sure everything's back in? What do you do?
Yeah, we've been starting earlier, and we usually have a half an hour breakfast in the middle of the morning, and we've gone through that. So we're getting finished earlier, about an hour earlier than normal. Willie went and bought two big kind of 3 foot by 2 foot electric fans, because two of the barns just were particularly hot. And yeah, look, the horses are fine, but they're like ourselves. They're not really built for this weather. So you just have to work around it.
Does it have an impact on some horses maybe getting less fit than they needed to around some horses that might have been being targeted at a race in Galway, or is it actually fine at this stage? It's kind of too late for that to have an impact.
It's probably more, Patrick, that they'll just potentially boil over on the day and just be lathered in sweat coming kickoff.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't be afraid that horses are missed fitness wise. Like, you know, as you say, a lot of the real fitness work is done before the last week anyway. And we've been riding out working ways normal. Like we've just done a bit earlier, and you know, so the horses haven't got their normal lie in, but I'm sure they'll survive for that. And then yeah, if it's going to be this warm next week, you will see horses biting over down at the start. And it was interesting. Philip Rotwell travelled his horses up to Ballinrobe the night before during the week on Tuesday, and stable them there overnight so as not to be travelling them in the middle of the heat. And he had a double and a second, nearly had a treble. So that's an interesting, tactic as well. You know, travelling in the heat, horses can get dehydrated. Keeping your horses hydrated is going to be the most important thing, really.
Yeah, it's a challenge for all of us. I did want to also ask you about the Panorama documentary during the week. Obviously, this has been a topic of conversation in the horse racing industry and beyond. When you saw it, when you first saw it, what was your reaction, Patrick?
I didn't actually watch it. I read about it beforehand, and I thought to myself, I don't really need to watch that. Wouldn't be something, not that anyone wants to watch it, but I said I wasn't going to watch it. I was talking to people. I mean, what was going on over there sounds absolutely despicable. I don't think anyone would dispute that. I don't think that what was going on over there is really much to do with Irish horse racing. But I mean, I know in our place, we rehome as many horses as we can. You've seen the likes of Under So, Jack Adam going back to the breeders in France. Fahim went up to the National Stud there. We have a very good relationship with Equied down in Wexford. They retrain, rehome horses. They've taken the likes of Ribbon Light, Catskill Knapp, Crack Mom, you know, kind of not superstar horses, and given them a great retraining and rehoming. And I think probably what I'd like to see maybe come out of this is that organisations like that maybe get a bit more funding, whether it's from the government or whether it's from HRI. I'm quite happy that we do our best to rehome as many horses as we can. And again, I didn't see the documentary, but most people's opinion seemed to be that it wasn't majorly, most of the problems involved in it were to do with over in England, where the place they were going, as opposed to our sport. But what did you think?
I thought that it's an opportunity for everybody to explain what is happening, and if there are any parts of the chain that are falling down, then that needs to be fixed. Because certainly there was a bit of the documentary where horses had come from Ireland, it seemed, certainly had Irish paperwork, and it had ended up at the slaughterhouse in the UK, and that bit was a bit concerning. So it wasn't specified who had been the responsible agent for it, but the implication was that the person who is responsible for this is known. So I think there should definitely be a conversation about that to make sure that if that is happening at the moment, then that stops. And I also think when an outside agency comes to look at a sport or an organisation, that that's an opportunity for the sport and the organisation to go, these are the steps that we have taken, and that there's a long-standing understanding in on our part that the care of the horses is something that we see right through to their end of life. And however that happens, if it is euthanasia or if that's just the natural life cycle. So that's what I would hope will happen, that there is an opportunity for the industry to come forward and say, actually, you know what, we've got pretty rigorous standards here, and if there are any bits that are falling down, then absolutely, let's have those conversations and fix them.
Definitely. I think in any industry or any way of life, you're always going to have not bad apples as such, but you're going to have some people who don't practice it as well as they should. And as you say, if this is an opportunity to tighten up things, to stop some people from not having the highest standards, then yes, I think that should be done. But I do think on the whole, I think racing can stand behind how we look after our horses. I do feel that very strongly. I feel that very strongly in Close Sutton. We've a huge amount of horses. We had a witch here till he was 30 years old. We actually put him down last month because he was just gone very old. Alexander Banquet was here till he was in his late 20s. I think the industry and I think the sport can stand behind it, but I think there's always room for improvement. And I do think probably more funding should go towards organizations that can retrain and rehome race horses. I think that is probably something that needs to improve going forward.
Good stuff. Patrick, thanks a million. Best of luck next week.
Great. Thanks very much.
So Patrick Mullins gave us his thoughts there on Galway coming up next week. A reminder, Friday Night Racing is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Johnny, any thoughts on any of that?
Yeah, like I think both of you spoke well there. You know, we had Susie Barclay on last week about the rehoming of horses. The funding for the rehoming is something that probably should be debated, because, like, if you are an owner, and for like a lot of owners won't have land, so they won't really have the means to look after the horse. But like when the trainer is finished with the horse, it's not his or her responsibility to then look after the horse because you own the horse. So there comes a point where the horse can no longer fulfill his or her role in terms of training, and then you're left with the choice, well, what do I do here? And to keep a horse on grass, from my experience, costs roughly 300 quid a month. So it's a lot of money, really, like 300 quid a month, which a lot of people wouldn't have. So then you have to kind of rehome the horse. And like I didn't, as we explained last week, I wasn't really all that au fait with this rehoming system that Susie Barclay spoke about. But a bit like the greyhound industry now, the greyhound industry has gone on this systematic rehoming of greyhounds to make them into pets. Like, and apparently greyhounds are incredibly sought after pets. You can see, like, if you look for a pet dog now from the relevant charities, it's not easy at all. They're in such demand, and seemingly, you know, it's counterintuitive, but greyhounds actually just like lying about all day, and they like, you know, they're great pets. They're very, very placid and so forth. But so that's the greyhound industry. But in terms of racing, I think the rehoming, it's actually a beautiful aspect to the story of the horse, in that I think people are very soppy around animals, and if they see a horse who was, like, they may have backed in a race or they were fond of at the racetrack, and they're able to track that horse online in terms of what he or she does, like, into, you know, the 20s of his or her life and so forth, I think there's actually scope to have, like, a racehorse might race for 2 years, but it's lovely to see what happens to racehorses afterwards. So I think the issue of rehoming has come to the fore a lot more, and horses are put down, they are euthanized, and, you know, I don't think Panorama, in fairness, had an issue per se with that, and that wasn't the stated narrative. It was more that some of the actual scenes of the slaughter of the horses were obviously horrific and grotesque, and nobody's going to argue with that. And, you know, there's one thing, a horse being you know, put down and so forth or euthanized, but no horse should be in agony. And I made this point myself. If you look after racehorses and you're in the stable with a horse can effectively kill you with one kick to the head. Like, the horses have way more power in their body than humans. But horses and humans have a great relationship. Horses love the care that they're given, and it doesn't happen. You obviously get highly strung horses, but the horses are very happy in racing and in training. And obviously it's essential that we look after them afterwards as well and talk about this. Like, let's not bury our head in the sand, because horses sometimes are put down after their careers are over.
I think that was the other side. Just having those conversations in public is actually no harm to give people confidence that this is being looked after. This is something that has been thought about. So, for sure. I did want to mention something else that has come across our radar. We've been contacted on Twitter a couple of times this week, and you brought it to our attention as well. Johnny Hassett, who is a well-known, hugely popular and respected breeze-up consigner, is currently undergoing life-saving treatment for cancer in Germany. His friends and colleagues in the breeze-up community are raising money to help pay for his treatment. You can search for Johnny Hassett on GoFundMe. We're going to tweet the link to that as well, so you'll be able to get it on our social channels. But just search Johnny Hassett on GoFundMe, and it's clear from the amount of money that they've raised, they're looking for 250 grand and they've already raised 160, but I understand there's a young family involved there as well. So, and it's treatment for lung cancer. I think Germany is the only place in the world that can get it at the moment. So.
Yeah, like obviously we talk about perspective and all that, but I do think a lot of people have maybe over the course of the pandemic, their spending has kind of like gone way down because it's just the way we're living now. And if you could, you know, spare 10, 20 euro or something, and you probably won't get a more noble cause than this. My friend Adam Potts, who'd be kind of more into the sales aspect of it than I would. Last year, like, I did a couple of articles on the sales industry, how, you know, the pandemic has changed many things. And one of the things was they were doing these online sales in terms of, which would have been unheard of. It's kind of like all these Zoom calls now where people are like, do we really need to fly to London for this? But they were doing online sales where people are literally buying horses on the basis of what they could see on the screen. But in terms of like the consigners and so forth, my friend Adam was showing me Johnny Hassett, and he had this really innovative way. He really embraced the pandemic in terms of videoing the horse and like doing kind of stories, talking around the horse as he put it on Instagram and Twitter and all that. And it was really innovative. And like Grayson's kind of a little bit behind in some of these things, but I don't know Johnny Hassett, but he's supposed to be a great character. He's from County Clare, obviously, from a racing family. County Clare is a racing backwater, albeit it spawned Kieran Fallon and the Hassett and so forth. But I was shocked when I heard this because, you know, he's a young man, lung cancer. So any help at all, 250 grand. The racing industry came together in a way that I think, we can be so proud of with the Pat Smullen pancreatic cancer fundraiser, which raised millions. And in this instance, I think Pat was conscious of the fact that, he was going to die, but it could help fund looking into pancreatic cancer, and that was Pat did that in a selfless way, but with this you could help possibly save his life.
Okay, a reminder of course, Friday Night Racing and Off the Ball is brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment, visit hri.ie. We'll talk about the racing at the weekend now. Actually, Love is in action for you and me and Tom. We all have them in the tote 10 to follow in this Saturday's King George at Ascot. If she wins, the points total will grow, but the podium will remain the same, with Tom, our runaway leader, on 279 points. I'm on 150, and you are Paddy Last on 136. Tote are proud sponsors of next week's Tote Galway Plate, a real highlight of the summer jumps calendar. For those attending Ballybrit, Tote will be there taking bets. If you can't attend in person, of course, you can sign up to bet online at tote.ie and avail of the Tote Plus. Right, the racing this weekend.
This is just like, it's a fantastic race. I was looking at the odds earlier. Broome, who's an exceptionally good racehorse in a six-runner field, is 40-1. There have been a couple of horses scratched, but it's been a great time for Frankel. Obviously, Adair having won the Derby, and him taking on Love to compare the Derby form, which has already been boosted, and Lone Eagle, who was second in the Irish Derby, taking on Love. She's a well-named filly. You know, Aidan O'Brien went for these kind of one-syllable names over the past 10 or 15 years, some of them better than others. She's definitely one of the better ones. Sue Magner, naming horses Was and Yet and all that, I wouldn't be a big fan of. But Love is a name that obviously people can relate to. And she's a great, great attitude to racing. She's second favourite or favourite for the Arc. And Aidan O'Brien has like this slew of horses up for a mile and two, a mile and a half, colts and fillies that are exceptionally good, from St. Mark's Basilica to Love to Snowfall. She's just landed on these horses whilst Galileo has passed away. And I think the race will be set up for her. I think she'll win. I think she's actually a great bet at 6-4.
Okay, so Love 6-4, Adair and 9-4, Lone Eagle 5-1, Wonderful Tonight 6-1, Mischief 9-1, and Broome is, what did you say?
He's like 28-41. Like, yeah. Love's victory at Royal Ascot was like, if you wanted to be, I guess if you wanted to be given a crash course in racing, she was running over an inadequate trip. It was her first run of the year. Yet Ryan Moore got out in front. So there are so many problems there in that I don't want to go too slow, I don't want to go too fast. I don't want to be done for speed, but I'm conscious that she's having her first run. And it was just an amazing race to watch because she was under pressure, but by the end, it's kind of like an optimum pace in maybe a 5,000 metre race. If you kind of go too early, you're going to get shot, even if you might want 10,000 metres ideally. And coming up to this trip will be far better for her. I think she'll win. She's just outstanding.
All right, good stuff, Johnny. Thanks very much for that. That is your lot this week for Friday Night Racing. We stream live every Friday afternoon at 3 o'clock. And then, of course, we're on Off the Ball on News Talk on the radio from 8 every Friday evening. Friday Night Racing and Off the Ball brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment.
Love.
Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie. See you next week.
Friday Night Racing
on Off the Ball.
Brought to you by Horse Racing Ireland. Love every racing moment. Visit hri.ie.